Just after 1 o'clock on Sportsnet 590's Fan, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you back again for another edition of Smith and Jones. And Jonesy, another scorcher out there in southern Ontario. Hopefully folks are finding a way to stay cool and stay safe. We're going to talk about summer baseball in a few moments' time when Shai Davidi joins us to kick off the show. But I wanted to start, because I know you're a big-time football fan, at least when it comes to your Cleveland Browns and me with the Buffalo Bills. Obviously, a lot of chatter, Jonesy, here in the last 24 hours, and heck, let's say the last couple of decades. But certainly things have been ramping up, over the last 24 hours, 48 hours, as it relates to the Washington Redskins and Dan Snyder, as you just heard with Andrew Nye talking about Snyder and the Redskins at least considering or reviewing their name and they're willing to at least consider the possibility of a name change. I don't know where we go from here in terms of the review and when we ultimately get to a decision regarding changing or not, but it sure seems like the pressure is being amped up at a greater height than perhaps it has been in quite some time. And I think we might have lost Jonesy for a second, so we'll get him back on the line in a couple of moments and see if maybe we can reconnect with Jonesy for this portion of the conversation, and certainly as we await Shai Davidi joining us. And I will say, folks, that this opens up the conversation certainly to a lot of teams and to a lot of team names, nicknames across all sports. And whether you agree or disagree, there certainly should be, at the very least, a review, a conversation going. And we've been talking about this for years. I've heard this conversation many times before on this station. And it's something that I don't think will ever go away until organizations and franchises ultimately make the decision to make the change. And whether it be, we're talking about the Atlanta Braves, the Kansas City Chiefs, the Chicago Blackhawks, obviously, as I mentioned, the Washington Redskins, the Cleveland Indians, the list goes on. And, I saw a post a little bit earlier talking about cities that have changed team names while not relocating from their respective cities. So precedent has been set to do it in other places before. Even if we're talking about the recent memory, heck, I know Jonesy and I both probably once per year, whether Charlotte's in Toronto or especially when we are in Charlotte, at some point one of us is going to say Bobcats instead of Hornets. Even if it's something as simple as going from Mighty Ducks just to Ducks, there have been teams that have changed names in the past and still stayed in the same city. I think I don't have the resolution or the solution right here for Washington and what they ultimately call their football team if they choose to move away from, and I think rightfully so, move away from the name Redskins. But I don't know what they ultimately land on. But to me, Chicago, the Blackhawks, could you not just simply go with Hawks? And keep a similar type logo that incorporates a bird now with the same color scheme and everything else? That, to me, would seem like some sort of an easy change for a team like that. And it's more of a challenge for other clubs, but it might mean a challenge is needed to move in a new direction, to set a new trend, to set a new history for your team, and to kind of start a new chapter in your organization's timeline. And this will be a time where you look back where precedent was ultimately set. And I think that that's going to be imperative on teams, like I said, like Washington and Chicago and hockey, Atlanta and baseball, Cleveland baseball, and others to ultimately look to make that change. And it will be interesting, to say the least. Think about in their own city, the best example of changing a team name but staying obviously in the city, the Washington Bullets changing to the Washington Wizards. I mean, we're talking completely, completely different, and rightfully so, getting rid of the Bullets moniker, considering at least at one time, Washington, I believe, was number one in the U.S. in terms of its suicide, or homicide rate, excuse me, and gun control in that city at one point was off the charts in terms of how bad it was. So it was clearly the right decision to move on from that name. But if precedent has been set in your own city, then I don't know why it could or should be considered difficult for the Washington football team to change as well. And we've got some technical issues worked out. Jonesy is on the line now, and I think you heard some of that, Jonesy, but just kind of looking at all of these franchises across all sports and the time that we're in now, where now is the time to perhaps set that precedent and set that new chapter in your organization's history.
Got to make a change, E. I agree with you 100%. And I'm going to look for the poster when I was teaching the eighth grade back in about 1990, 91. The same young man, David Cummings, that called me about what's going on in the world now when we were talking about Rodney King in the classroom. It was on the back page of Sports Illustrated, a feature article, and it had four pennants. One pennant said, and I'm going to look for it. I've got it somewhere in a storage area or a basement or somewhere. The four pennants said Kansas City Jews, New York Negroes, Washington Redskins, Atlanta Braves. There might have been a fifth that said Cleveland Indians. And it just said at the bottom, it said something like, how do you feel about these?
Yeah.
And it was to me, and we had a whole class discussion about the names and, you know, like, where do you go with it? And I mean, to hook the boys, especially, I had to have these kinds of sports discussions and, you know, it's time now. It is. I mean, Daniel Snyder, you're a billionaire. You change the name, you do what's right. You get Nike and FedEx and all those people to stay with you. You rebrand the team. You make a killing with new material in terms of marketing or just now's the time to do it. And don't talk to me about the legacy or anything like that. Whatever Doug Williams accomplished as a, you know, as an African-American quarterback or Charles Mann or, you know, Ron McDowell, the dancing bear, whatever those guys did in the legacy of the Washington Football Club, Charlie Taylor, Billy Kilmer, it all still stands. Joe Gibbs, it all still stands. You're just changing the name. You're not taking away the history. And, you know, to a different degree, we went through this at York University when they changed the name from We Were the Yeomen to make it the Lions, to make it more inclusive. And yeah, I was upset they changed the name, but I understood it. I understood where they were coming from with it. So it's time. It's time for Daniel Snyder. It's time for a lot of places to sit down and, you know, talk with the people that are feeling the brunt of the name, the derogatory nature of the name. If it is indeed derogatory, then change it. Like I said, in Eastern Michigan, they changed their name to the Eagles from the Hurons, and the people of that area were upset. Some of them were upset because, hey, that kept us alive in that area. That kept our history and our heritage and our culture somewhat, you know, in the news and in people's headspace. So talk to people and make the change. But this one I don't think needs any talking, Eric. I think you just go ahead and make the change.
Well, and I don't know if you heard, Jones, as you were trying to scramble to get yourself reconnected, and obviously we're thankful that you got back on, and thanks to Lance and all our crew behind the scenes to get things back on track. But one of the things I was mentioning, and these are very minor changes, but you had the Mighty Ducks changing to the Ducks. You had the Devil Rays changing to the Rays. In the NBA, you had the Bobcats changing to the Hornets, and I joked about how you and I screw that up at least once per year. And you also had the Hornets changing to the Pelicans. But perhaps the best example, and you talked about the Yeoman to the Lions, but in the NBA and also in the city of Washington, you already have precedent set and an example being set
right
by a fellow, you know, Big Four team in the Washington Wizards, once known as the Bullets, changing their name right down the road from you. So
right,
precedent's
right.
Already been set in your city. Why can't you then go ahead and do the same?
Should be easy. You're right, Eric. It should be easy to do. And I'm waiting for it. I'm waiting for the, you know, I'm waiting for the change. It's long overdue. And I don't buy the whole monetary aspect of it. And I mean, you're going to make a ton of money on the rebranding and new jerseys, and keep the colors. Then if you want, keep the colors, change the name, but you have an opportunity to do something really, really big here. and benefit from it from a financial standpoint. So go ahead and do it.
And as I said, it's going to certainly open up the conversation, and it should, to the Chicago Blackhawks and the Kansas City Chiefs and the Cleveland Indians and the Atlanta Braves, and the list goes on about a number of teams that are probably going to have to do their internal reviews and research to figure out exactly what they should be doing moving forward. Because this is not a new conversation. It's just clearly gaining a lot more traction yet again. And I think we're at a point where we're seeing at least the possibility of change, or the greater likelihood of change, more so than ever before on a lot of things. And this seems like a perfect time, perhaps, to be readdressing this issue.
Definitely. I mean, the time is right now. And as you said, I don't think anybody would be upset. I think people are starting to see why you would want to make that change. And I mean, that name has been, the name of that Washington Football Club has been dubious right from the start. I just think it's time to change it.
Well, we shift our attention from football to baseball, as we are still counting down to and awaiting the first official game to be played. But now we have a little bit more clarity as it relates to the Toronto Blue Jays and what they will be doing, at least in the near future. Kind of present time. What does their season look like? For those questions and answers and much more, joining us on the line, MLB Insider, Blue Jays reporter and columnist from Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca, Shai Davidi. Shai, how you doing today?
I'm all right. How you fellas doing?
Good, Shai. Good, man.
We're doing well, Shai. Where do we stand as of, what time is it, 1:13 p.m. on July 3rd? Because this seems to change as it relates to baseball and the Blue Jays, almost on an hourly, if not daily basis, Shai. But where do we stand as of right now with the Blue Jays' plans moving forward?
Well, at some point this weekend, largely dependent on when the majority of their tests get back from the lab in Salt Lake City, the Blue Jays will get on a charter flight and travel north and probably either Sunday or Monday hold their first official workout here in Toronto. For now, the handful of players that have already cleared their two tests, with two negative tests, I should say, they're able to hold limited workouts in a closed environment in Dunedin, so they would be doing that on the field today. Everyone else who hasn't gotten their clearance yet, they're going to be in isolation while they await those lab results to come in. So, some teams have started their first official workouts today. The Blue Jays just part and parcel there for the time being, and looks like the next couple of days or so, the Blue Jays will get here and hold their first official workout of training camp 2.0.
Shai, we're a long way, away from this, and it's down the road, but like, do you see games being played in Toronto? Do you see what happens when visiting teams come in? I've read your piece about, the buses and all of that stuff. But I mean, if you're a place like Ontario, or you're a country like Canada that's done a good job of containing the virus and, kind of dealing with it, as opposed to, look at the Blue Jays division, like New York, Tampa. Like these teams that are coming in, like how do you deal with that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's the whole reason why this isn't done yet. But the plan, and I saw a lot of the comments and some of the reaction on social media yesterday, and I understand this is divisive, but the plan, the way that it works, provided that you get compliance and everybody obeys the quarantine, they're just going to exist in this tiny little bubble and have essentially no contact with the outside community. And the theory would be that during the regular season, it would be the same way. Visiting teams would come here, take a sterilized bus directly from the private terminal at Pearson to the Dome Hotel. They'd have an isolated room block there. They'd have a direct path from the hotel to the stadium, in which they don't even have to go outside. And again, if everybody has 100% compliance, this really, there's not going to be much risk to, if any risk, to the greater community. So, right now, Mark Shapiro said yesterday, he said they're about 80% of the way there in terms of the health aspect, working with the Public Health Agency of Canada and the other levels of of health officials at the different levels of government, and they still have to work out on some of the travel logistics as well. So they have some work to do. They have a little bit of time on that front. You know, the regular season, you know, the, right now the schedule kicking around, the Blue Jays are set to be on the road for the first week, so they have a little bit of margin for error to work with. But time is of the essence, and I think they have a chance to get there. But the work remains to be done, and we'll see if they can satisfy the government demands the way that they did with this initial plan for training camp.
Shai, I don't want to be guilty of talking out of both sides of my mouth here, and maybe this sounds like splitting hairs, but I think it is two separate, you know, scenarios, two separate leagues, two separate ideas or proposals in a sense going forward. The NBA has a bubble in one city with 22 teams under one roof and within one sort of gated community in a sense. And they're already talking about issues of potentially guys leaving, or will they be able to contain the virus, let alone contain the players from staying in their rooms and just going from hotel to the gym and back and doing little to nothing else. I'm not sure how baseball or hockey, for that matter, do it, where it sounds great in theory. You go from the hotel to the field, back to the hotel, that's it. But when you're in a city and in multiple cities, are guys not going to venture out for a walk, let alone for a beer on a patio, let alone for a dinner? Are they not going to meet a friend or somebody else that they know from that city? There's to me, such a greater chance for the spread of the virus or for contamination, for contraction, when you're hopscotching across borders and hopscotching into multiple cities. I just don't see how hockey and baseball are going to do this. And I think the challenge for Toronto as well, not to nitpick on one small detail, but as you said, there's still some travel stuff to be worked out. One of the things that we still hear all the time, and Jonesy and I are lucky enough to travel on the team charter, guys still complain about the fact that at least when you're departing Toronto, not when you land. When you land, you can land at the private terminal and you're good to go. But when you depart, you're often departing from the main terminal, and you have to go through the main terminal, go through a screening area that does have interaction with the public. And that could be a potential issue, especially for not only the Jays, but for all these teams that are coming in and out.
Sure. And, you know, I mean, those are some of the logistical issues that have to be worked out. And look, I mean, this, everything depends on compliance in any of the leagues, mm-hmm. right? And I think that what the sport leaders and the individual team executives and the clubhouse leaders and players union is trying to enforce upon these players is just like, look, this is what's riding on your compliance. And, you know, it takes one bad decision. One bad decision could bring down a team. And if players aren't going to be able to observe that, I mean, then there's no shot at this, right? But, you know, you'd like to think that these are all adults and they should be treated as adults and given the responsibility of adults. You know, here in Toronto, I think the training camp part will be difficult because, you know, the Jays are going to be here for 3 weeks. They've got a 14-day quarantine to observe. You know, that's a pretty intense period. But if you're a visiting club and you're here for 3 or 4 games, brief series, just in and out, you know, staying in your room isn't that much of a sacrifice. So I really think this all depends on the mindset and the discipline and the dedication. And, you know, you're seeing, you know, some of the comments from someone like Mike Trout today, you know, he was wondering why players are allowed to even leave their hotel rooms when they're on the road in the first place. And so you've got players, influential players within the game, who are saying, "Hey, boys, you know, let's reel it in and stay inside and not do anything stupid here." And you know, I think if that's sort of the pressure point, and that's where some of the most influential people in the game their heads are at, then maybe it does have a chance of succeeding.
You know, Shai, I was just going to get to that. I mean, here's Mike Trout, you know, well-decorated and acclaimed player in the game and one of the big names, asking that question. And now, you know, we heard in Andrew Nye's update just a little while ago with a baby on the way, their family expecting the first child. You know, he's thinking about not playing, period. Do you think something like that has any influence where a guy would say, well, shoot, if Mike Trout is making all this money and he's willing to give it up for family and not take any risks, what am I doing? Maybe I need to play, but is the risk worth it? How much do you think a guy like that has influence over his peers?
I mean, he does. But I would also say, look, you know, Mike Trout and, you know, a handful of players like him, they're in a unique position because, you know, he takes a time out this year. I mean, he's still got around $300 million coming in the next decade or so, right? Like this, whatever he gives up this year is just, you know, a blip on the radar for him. Whereas, you know, for other guys who are making, you know, in and around the major league minimum or, you know, maybe are just first year ARB eligible and have gotten are getting paid for the first time, you know, they may not be able to sit this one out in quite the same way unless there's some sort of overriding medical reason that's driving this. So, you know, I think that this is really unique to a player's situation. And, you know, Mike Trout, just by virtue of who he is, what he's done, and his contract and all that stuff, you know, he's got more options available to him than most of the other players in the game do.
Speaking with Shai Davidi from Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca. Shai, let's play hypothetical for a second. Knocking on wood, fingers crossed, everything works out, you know, perfectly. The season is able to start. It's able to be played, and infections are minimal, if any. How do the Toronto Blue Jays approach this 60-game season? How do all teams approach this? Is it kind of going full bore, trying to win the World Series in this shortened year, or do you change your approach as an organization, accepting or realize that whether it's 162 or just 60, maybe you're not yet there? How do you think the Jays and other clubs will approach this?
Well, I think by virtue of the fact that it's only 60 games and you're subject to all kind of small sample size randomness, you know, you got to throw caution to the wind and get after it, right? Like, you have a good 60-game run, you're in the postseason, and then who knows what happens from that point forward. I think the challenge for a team in position like the Blue Jays, where, you know, they're not fully in their competitive window just yet, and they still have got some player development and player growth to do this season, you know, you've got to ensure that you're getting certain players some opportunity and some reps, so that this isn't the lost season developmental-wise for you, right? And so that means, you know, giving Teoscar Hernandez more run just to make sure you know what he is. And, you know, seeing how, you know, Danny Jansen and Reese McGuire do behind the plate and, you know, deciding kind of what, well, who's your guy there. And, you know, figuring things out, is Kevin Biggio your second baseman? Does he need to be a super utility guy? Can Vladdy handle third? You know, these are questions that you still need to answer for yourself, where so that you're in position in 2021, you know, fingers crossed we're in a more normal world at that point, that you're ready to go, because that's really when your competitive window should be starting. So, you know, the Blue Jays have to balance a developmental end of things. There are no minor leagues this year. They've got to find a way to make sure that someone like Nate Pearson is being, you know, used the right way. Patrick Murphy, Anthony Kay, Julian Merriweather, some of their other young arms, that they're getting their work in and their innings in and their growth in. So the Blue Jays in particular will be walking a finer line than most because they're going to try to be doing those two things concurrently.
Well, and Shai, as you said, with no minor leagues, it's not like you can get, you know, you can get big looks at anybody else by just calling them up. And I'm sure there's going to be a protocol around that too, with, you know, with the way the rosters are set and all of that. So, you know, how much more intense does it make it, although it's only 60 games in a shortened season, for, you know, for these guys to get after it and for management to be able to make some decisions on them?
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be super tricky too, right? I mean, the other thing to consider is that guys are going to be coming to training camp or are at training camp in different states of readiness, right? Because, like, if you were in lockdown in a place where you had all the resources in the world and you were able to stay relatively hot and active throughout this period of time, you've got the jump on somebody who, you know, maybe was more isolated and was doing his throwing against a pitching net, for example, right? Or just limited to hitting off a tee or whatever it may be. So, you know, that adds another element variable. It adds another variable to this that's really hard to predict. And, you know, a 3-week training camp is far quicker than normal. You're going to have to really be careful and pay attention to the risk of potential soft tissue injuries, especially early on, because you're going to be asking guys to exert themselves much sooner than you usually are. So it's going to be immensely tricky, like in so many different ways, in so many different layers. You know, like, you know, we often joke like, oh, dude, you know, everybody's playing checkers and somebody else is playing chess. I mean, everybody else is playing chess and somebody else is like running 6 boards. You know, that's what this is going to be like.
Shai, two guys specifically. I like that analogy, by the way. Two guys specifically. I know you rhymed off a number of players a couple of moments ago, but Austin Martin isn't signed yet. What do the Jays do with him, if anything? Is he involved in this 60-game season? And what about Nate Pearson and how the Jays maybe use him?
So Austin Martin, I think, will get done relatively soon. I don't think that there's necessarily a lot of work left there. You know, the signing pool is the signing pool, and I'm not certain why that's not done just yet. But I don't think that'll necessarily be long. And once he does sign, he'll be added to the active player pool, the 60-man player pool, and, you know, in all likelihood, he'll end up at the alternative training site that each team has to set up, and he'll be working out with some of the other prospects from lower down in the Blue Jays farm system that will be there as well, just, you know, doing some development, getting integrated into the pro game such that it is this year, and that's sort of like the best the Blue Jays can do for someone like him at this point. As for Nate Pearson, to me, this is pretty cut and dry. He's on your opening day roster, and he's in your starting rotation if he's healthy. And, you know, if he's not on that opening day roster, I don't think that you could come up with a more blatant example of service time manipulation, because there's no reason with a 30-man roster and the, you know, the situation that the pitching's in right now for him not to be with the club when it opens. So I think that one's going to be really interesting. And, you know, Nate Pearson, more than anything, he needs innings. And the only place he's getting those innings is at the big leagues this year. If he's not on the opening day roster, I think there's going to be some very hard questions asked of the Blue Jays.
Hey, Shai, we appreciate the time and the insight today. Thanks for this, and stay safe and healthy.
Same to you guys, and appreciate it. Talk soon.
Thanks, Shai.
There is Shai Davidian. Jonesy, we will have games played on Canadian soil again, barring any setbacks, and clearly we hope that isn't the case. But the Canadian Elite Basketball League announcing that they will go forward with a full schedule of games for their summer series, tipping off on July 25th. It's a 26-game competition that will end on August 9th. All games are going to be played in St. Catharines, the arena in St. Catharines, and the CEBL is saying that the teams that will be there, obviously every team in the league, they're going to be separated from the general public. Strict screening and COVID-19 protocols will be adhered to under the supervision of medical officials. Extensive health and safety measures are going to be maintained for participants, including social distancing and other specialized practices designed to limit interaction among participants. So again, that's the Canadian Elite Basketball League. That, of course, is, you know, the likes of you know, the Hamilton Honey Badgers and the Fraser Valley Bandits, and the list goes on of in the CEBL. And it's going to be interesting to see, as they're kind of the first, in a sense, to get out in any sport, at least on this soil in Canada, preparing to tip off their summer series, their tournament, in a sense, their season, in a little more than 3 weeks' time.
Yeah, Eric, we've talked a lot about baseball, and, you know, with Shai and what baseball is going to do to try and, you know, play it in a way that players don't get infected. I'm sure there'll be all kinds of protocol around, and I've read some of it about who rubs the baseballs and where they go and how they get brought to all of those things brought to the umpire. Like there's all this. Baseball has this huge document the way basketball does, but, you know, it's a little bit tougher in basketball because of the dynamic nature of the sport. And, you know, you could be the right fielder and go run in and out and not have a play or a chance at a ball in 6-7 innings. If you're on the basketball court, I mean, there's only 10 guys on the court. There's like somebody, you're going to be touching that ball. You're going to be in close proximity to somebody. You and I got off the plane, and, you know, when we went for our tests, when we got back from Toronto, we were amazed that none of the Raptor players, with what went on with Utah, tested positive with Rudy Gobert. I mean, there was a fight at the end of the game, a scuffle at the end of the game, and Gobert was in the middle of it with OG and like guys putting their 2 cents in and other guys coming in. Like, I shouldn't be, but I'm a little bit fearful about one guy having this and all of a sudden it gets transmitted and then you've got to shut it down. And that's in basketball. You know, we've got hub cities for hockey now. It's in baseball. I don't know what the NFL is going to do. The CFL's decided there's nothing going on. It's just a crazy time right now. I really think I love sports. I mean, it provides us with a chance to make our living, but I just think you got to be really, really careful right now.
Well, we'll continue on that topic specifically. We mentioned the CEBL, but the NBA, and of course the bubble down in Orlando, for more thoughts and insights on that and other issues related to the NBA. We will be joined by Jeff Zilgut from USA Today when we continue on Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. We're still counting down the days until the NBA officially opens camp down in Orlando, let alone the first game tipping off in a little more than 3 weeks, or scheduled to tip off on July 30th down in the bubble in Orlando. For more on that and other issues related to the NBA, please be joined by Jeff Zilgut from USA Today. Jeff, how you doing today?
I'm well, Eric. Paul, hope you guys are doing the same.
We're hanging in, Jeff.
Yep, we're hanging in. We appreciate the time. Listen, I'll hit it with you right off the bat, Jeff. Do you think we will be playing in the NBA on July 30th? Do you think that this will get done and resume as scheduled?
I think there's a two-part answer to the question, Eric. And the first part of it, I do think we will have games on July 30th, and we'll play them. Do I know for sure whether or not we'll finish a season? I mean, that's really out of anyone's control, I think. I mean, it's sort of like we've heard from the beginning, is that, you know, the tells us. I do have my concerns about the NBA teams going into the bubble and trying to pull this off successfully without any major problems. And I do acknowledge that the NBA's plan, and you guys have seen it, 113 pages of detailed information on health and safety protocols and how to try to, if not keep the virus out, how to minimize it from a serious outbreak. And so I think they're doing all the right things in that regard. But, you know, as Adam Silver said last week, you know, none of these things are done without some kind of risk. And that's what the NBA has to live with. And hopefully there is nothing major that happens that, you know, really puts a damper on what the NBA is trying to do.
Jeff, we were just talking with Shai Davidi, you know, our fine baseball columnist at Sportsnet, and he said that there's an impetus on the guys to straighten up and walk properly and not stray from, you know, the medical protocols and the societal protocols that have been put down. I'm sure the NBA has those in their document too. Can guys resist that temptation? I guess just flat out. We all know the nature of NBA players and young millionaires. Can they make that sacrifice? Because that's the only way, really, that this thing's going to be able to go through to the end without incident. If people are, you know, people are making the sacrifice, everybody's making the sacrifice all the way through.
As a group, Paul, I think they can. Do I know? You know, do I think maybe that someone will stray, try to leave campus, as the NBA is calling it?
I mean, you're never going to get, no matter what the rule is, you know, you guys can weigh in on this, but are you ever going to get 100% compliance? I mean, that's a hard ask, but I think the sacrifice is there. And think about this. After the first 2 weeks, you know, those teams 17 through 22 are going to be going home, and then there will be a short play, our first round. You know, we think some series will be first rounds. And so you're starting to eliminate teams and players. And I think at that point, you know, you can start to see that, you know, the players will be taking it seriously. Again, will there be something, you know, one or two maybe that gets caught trying to leave campus and then has to pay the price with some extra quarantine rules and the potential loss of salary? But I'm on these Zoom calls. You guys are too. It's, you know, Paul and Eric, everyone has made the sacrifice to try to do the right thing by and large the last 3 months, 4 months. I know some players have tested positive. That could be for a variety of reasons, and I'm not willing to say they're all just because a player wants to go out, you know, and socialize. And so I'm trying to keep the positive mindset that, you know, that most teams and players, you know, will follow the rules and do the right thing. And look, I'm hearing things. You guys are too. They're going to try to do their best to give players opportunities beyond just video games and ping pong and pool while they're in their hotel. You know, they're going to try to provide some talks. They're going to try to provide other entertainment. I know it's not going to be the same, but you hit the right word, Paul. It's a sacrifice. Everyone inside that bubble to make this work, it's a sacrifice. And I have to believe that teams have made that communication to players and staff, and everyone understands it.
Speaking with Jeff Zilgut from USA Today, you know, I don't want to be, Jeff, cavalier about this, I suppose, but there are many guys clearly that have wives, that have children, that have homes and large estates to wander, but there's lots of guys that aren't married. There's lots of guys that don't have family. There's lots of guys that are living in condos. This might actually be better than what they've got in terms of their setup at home. Yeah, you got to stay quarantined or stay isolated in your room when you're not at the gym, or when you're not outside by the pool, when you're not out golfing, when you're not out, you know, watching a stand-up comedian or a DJ or playing games or ping pong or whatever else. This, in many sense, to your point, has a lot of options for guys that might not have had that even in their own homes or in their own cities if they actually were still trying to live a responsible life in the midst of a pandemic, you know, adhering to social distancing and whatnot wherever they live. This might be a better alternative for a lot of guys.
Eric, I think there's a portion of that is true. Look, I think all of us who have tried to do the right thing, you know, since, you know, late March or mid-March, whenever you really first started digging in to being safe. And so all of us, this includes the three of us sitting here talking on the phone, we are also looking for some kind of respite from this. So, you know, a change of scenery for some of these guys is going to be good. And I'm not going to also underestimate the difficulty it is going to be on some of those players who, one, do have families that are going to miss them for a significant amount of time. That includes the coaches and staffers, not only the players or anyone else inside that you know, so-called bubble. But then that idea that you're talking about, you know, I think we've been hearing on some of these Zoom calls, a lot of players, when they live in a city, they are often in a condo. You know, they are by themselves. And so this offers them that opportunity that you're talking about, the availability to do some other things. Look, it's not going to be the same. You know, you guys know when players get to Oakland and San Francisco last year for the finals, they get a chance to stretch their legs, go out for, you know, very, very nice meals, have things to do, places to go. We know that's not going to be the same. You know, so the league's trying to do everything they can. Look, we're starting to try to circle in and zero in on the situations that we hope, you know, there's enough to do and enough players follow the rules so that they can pull this off without anything bad happening.
Jeff, which teams do you think have, I was going to say, an advantage or a built-in advantage? I mean, I think the playing field is pretty leveled with everybody having basically an off-season to recover. Who do you see as potential a dark horse, a team that, you know what, they're healthy now, they've had some time, You know, they might be at the bottom of the standings. I mean, I think of a team like Portland. Who do you think might be a team that, you know, in this restart and moving into this restructured playoffs, they get healthy and they catch fire and they surprise people?
Well, you mentioned Portland, and they'll have it tough if they make the playoffs, playing the Lakers most likely in the first round. That's not easy, but look, you mentioned it. They're getting Nurkic back. They're getting Zach Collins. It's a team with Damian Lillard and C.J. McCollum that reached the conference finals a year ago. You know, also, I don't think the Lakers, you know, when you're looking at it, they would rather play Memphis or Sacramento. They don't want New Orleans. They don't want Portland. That would be difficult matchups with, you know, that's not your typical first round matchup that a team is used to, especially when home court has been eliminated. When I look over to the Eastern Conference, I have a little bit more trouble finding that team, but you know, they are not in the top four right now. I do look at a team like the Philadelphia 76ers, getting a healthy Ben Simmons back. We know that shooting might suffer early on because guys, you know, we're seeing on these Zoom calls, haven't touched a basketball. Chris Middleton talked about it today for the Bucks, 2-3 months. I mean, he's one of their premier three-point shooters that gives them ability to stretch the floor. And so a team like the Sixers that, you know, doesn't rely on the three to get Ben Simmons healthy driving to the hoop, that's a team that, you know, I think has the potential to be dangerous in the Eastern Conference. After that, Paul, to maybe talk to the larger extent of, you know, I'm looking at teams that are veterans, have leadership, have been deep into the playoffs, and the Toronto Raptors, you know, certainly fit that mode right there of a team that knows what it takes, has the veterans, and, you know, necessarily doesn't need lots of time to, you know, find the chemistry like some of these other teams might. And so that's one reason, you know, I look at the Raptors. I do look at the Bucks. I look at the Lakers, the Clippers. You know, another team, while they're not among that top three or four in each conference, the Houston Rockets are another team that, you know, if they find it and start clicking with Westbrook and James Harden, it's a team that can make some noise as well. And so those are all the things I'm starting to try to put together. You know, and guys who really look at this as an opportunity to win a championship, knowing that they may not have many more. And that is a lot of the guys, you know, on teams I just mentioned.
Speaking with Jeff Zilgut from USA Today. Jeff, you mentioned the 22 teams in the bubble, obviously teams leaving as they're eliminated from the regular season and then from the first round. Can you explain to me, I don't even know if it's going to happen or not, but can you explain to me why we even need a second bubble for the eight teams that aren't in the playoffs? I mean, I'm failing to understand why eight teams that aren't in a season or a postseason need to be on the floor or need to be gathered together in a secondary bubble anywhere.
All right, so here's the best I can answer that, Eric, is I don't think this secondary bubble is going to happen. Look, the ESPN reporter reported is well-connected. I mean, everyone knows Jackie McMullen's credentials when it comes to the NBA. I just think maybe some executives jumped the gun on how realistic that this was going to be. Maybe the GMs are interested in this, but this is something that needs to be agreed upon with the other owners in the league, especially the eight who are not going. And I don't know if you have full buy-in from all eight owners to do this. Then you have to get the NBPA's agreement. And Michelle Roberts is already on record. She's the executive director of that, is saying that she wants the same bubble-like conditions for those eight teams and the players on those teams as it is in Orlando. And that's a difficult ask right there, and a huge expense on top of it. And then the other portion of it, though, Eric, the one thing that teams who aren't playing have complained about, and it's one reason that the Phoenix Suns have snuck into this, is that going from March 11th all the way until probably November before those teams who aren't playing gather again for training camps to start the 2021 season, that's a long stretch without having played basketball, Eric and Paul. And I think those executives want their teams to have some availability to play together somehow during this stretch. And so I think the compromise is going to be to see if those teams can't get their players together in their cities, home cities, to have workouts and to have some kind of scrimmaging so that they don't go that entire stretch without having some kind of workout and competitive basketball being played. And I think that's the main concern for those eight executives and coaches on those teams. They're teams that didn't make the playoffs or even the bubble scenario. And so they need that player development, and that's really what we're talking about. So from that aspect, I do understand why they want to somehow have access to allow their players in, but I don't think a second bubble is going to be the answer.
Hey, Jeff, we appreciate the time, as always. I don't know when we're going to see you again, but hopefully sooner than later. Stay safe and healthy, and all the best.
You guys do the same, and look forward to rejoining in person.
Thanks, Jeff.
There is Jeff Zilligan, national NBA writer for USA Today. We'll step aside for the break. Come back with more on Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith & Jones. Jonesy, the one question I still have, and I'll have it for probably the next few weeks or months, is I'm still thinking about next year for the NBA.
Yeah,
the NHL, for Major League Baseball. We're all talking about right now. I'm still thinking about what does it look like come December, come January, and what next season might entail.
To be honest, Eric, my feeling is I'm not sure we see fans in the stands or, broadcasters in arenas. I hate to say this, but I don't think we see it till the start of the 21-22 season. I just hope they come out with something that can help this thing, but I think you got to be safe rather than sorry.
Thanks for tuning in this week, folks. Writer's Block is coming up next. Thanks to Jeff Zilligan, Shai Davidi, to all of you and our crew. For Paul Jones, I'm Eric Smith. It's been Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.